with that Chinook flow, you also get drying of the air, which is really good for the spread of wildfires.
Residents of a subdivision north of Fairbanks evacuate ahead of a fast-moving wildfire. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, August 3rd. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, a small exodus of doctors from the Kenai Peninsula puts a strain on remaining providers.
It's absolutely vital that we grow our own as best we can, because people do tend to work in the place they do residencies.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
You know that eating fruits and vegetables supports good health, but did you also know that frozen and canned produce offers the same health benefits as fresh? It's true. Whether fresh, frozen, canned, or from the land, eating fruits and veggies can lead to a long and healthy life. So when it comes to getting the fruits and veggies you need to stay healthy, remember, every bite counts. This message sponsored by Snap.
The rapid advance of a wildfire prompted an evacuation notice late last night for a neighborhood north of Fairbanks. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, the Lost Horse Creek fire has grown dramatically over the past 2 days.
Fairbanks North Star Borough Public Information Officer Lenine Livingston says the Level 3 GO evacuation notice covers a portion of the Haystack subdivision off the Elliott Highway north of Fairbanks.
For the Upper Haystack Drive area, residents were instructed to go, evacuate, leave that area immediately. It's my understanding that, fortunately, there are not a lot of residences in that area.
Livingston says larger areas to the south and north were put into level 2 or SET status.
The lower part of Haystack Drive area and the more northeastern part, which is the Poker Flat watershed area, those folks in those areas need to be prepared to leave at a moment's notice.
The evacuation notices were issued last night due to an increase in activity on the Lost Horse Creek fire east of Elliott Highway Mile 18, about 3.5 miles north of Haystack. The fire was among dozens started by lightning last week.
It plotted in a limited, modified area. It exhibited no active fire, no active fire growth. It was just a little duffer, we call them. It was just a little smoke.
State Division of Forestry and Fire Protection Information Officer Sam Harrell says that changed Tuesday with the return of warm, dry weather, and the state began hitting the Lost Horse Creek fire with water and retardant drops. But despite the attention, Harrell says it's continued to burn through dense forest, including large areas of highly flammable black spruce.
Last night, Air Attack was guessing that it was between 2,000 and 2,500 acres.
Harrell says crews are being deployed to work the blaze and into the Haystack subdivision to assess properties for structure protection. He says Alaska's Type 2 Incident Management Team will be taking over management of the Lost Horse Creek fire and several smaller wildfires burning in the general area north of town. Harrell emphasizes that many areas of the borough are under Level 1 or ready evacuation notices.
We all need to know our plan for what to do if an evacuation is called for our area. If we have large animals, we need to have a plan on what to do with those. If we have a kennel full of sled dogs, you need a plan for what to do. If you're a caretaker, if you have elderly folks who aren't as mobile, need a little more time to get places, these are the things that you need to be working on in a ready status.
The borough is still in the process of ramping up services for evacuees, and Livingston says emergency operations does not currently have an evacuation shelter available.
That detail is still being worked out. We have been in contact with the local Red Cross.
Livingston says the borough has some capacity to help with evacuated animals.
We normally would have a pet or livestock emergency evacuation area located at the Tanana Valley Fairgrounds. However, the fair is going on right now. The good news is we will be able to accept and assist a certain number of household animals at the animal control shelter.
The threat of additional evacuations is real. There are 140 active wildfires in the state, mostly in the interior. and fire-conducive weather is predicted to intensify. National Weather Service forecaster Dustin Salpsman says temperatures in the 80s and possibly 90s are expected this weekend, along with southerly airflow.
Result in Chinook conditions, and with that Chinook flow, you also get drying of the air, which is really good for the spread of wildfires.
A special statement from the Weather Service says the Chinook winds will develop Friday near the Alaska Range and also push into the Tanana Valley. It says the hot, dry conditions are forecast to last into Monday before a slow cool down begins. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
More than a half dozen doctors and other providers have left or are soon leaving the central Kenai Peninsula. That's putting a strain on the remaining providers, even as the hospital system works in overdrive to recruit new doctors. KDLL's Riley Board reports on why they're leaving and what their absence means for healthcare in the region.
Alexa Roden has been a primary care physician at Central Peninsula Internal Medicine for the past 3 years. Her husband, also a doctor, worked in the area through a hospitalist contractor. The couple initially planned to make it a temporary gig, but they eventually decided to make the peninsula their home. Now, though, they're headed to Bozeman, Montana, where they'll work for the local hospital system there. Roden says the biggest reason she's leaving is to find better daycare and school opportunities for her 1.5-year-old.
It took months of search to find a nanny. We hired a private nanny. We were financially able to and very fortunate for that, but we had initially looked at daycare first, and there was not a single daycare opening on the peninsula that could accept her.
Looking forward, Roden says she has a responsibility to give her daughter a good education and just doesn't feel like that's available to her on the Central Peninsula. She also says her husband's night shifts at the hospital here meant they worked opposite schedules, which made childcare difficult.
I worked 4 10-hour days, so I worked a pretty standard week, but he had 13-hour shifts, sometimes for 14 days in a row, which is not industry standard. And that, you know, that was a big factor of just like being able to be present with our child and with each other.
Roden says doctors often come in pairs, which means it's easy for a community to lose two at once. At least 3 doctors have recently left the hospital staff. 2 doctors left the practice where Roden worked, and several other primary care providers and specialists have left the area over the last year. Doctors say this puts stress on the remaining providers.
As a guy who should be winding down, I had to look at this summer and say to myself, okay, this is going to be one of my busiest summers ever, and I've just got to suck it up and deal with it.
John Bramante is a partner with Central Peninsula Internal Medicine, the hospital-run primary care practice where Roden worked. He's been an internist in the Soldotna area for 30 years. He says the medical community has been generally growing over that time, and he's just beginning to see a small exodus. He attributes that in part to the social impacts of COVID.
You know, it opened people's eyes up to the potential of options or opportunities elsewhere, or scaling back, or being closer to family.
And Bramante says Alaska used to be able to attract doctors with better pay than the rest of the country, but he's not sure that advantage exists anymore.
I think in general, physician pay in Alaska has tended to be higher than in the lower 48. That was the case for many years.
And he says medical school opportunities also play a part. There's only 1 med school in the state, and it's a collaboration between the University of Alaska Anchorage and 5 other universities in the Northwest. According to UAA, 60% of the students in that program go on to practice in the state, and graduates make up 14% of licensed physicians in the state. The program was one of the targets of Governor Dunleavy's budget vetoes in 2021 before he reversed course.
It probably met the biggest pushback because it's absolutely vital that we sort of grow our own as best we can, because people do tend to work in the place they do residencies.
Bramante says the outflow of doctors is difficult, especially in a growing retirement age community with increasingly complex medical needs. He says the hospital has been in overdrive trying to recruit new staff. It's also considering a new solution of hiring so-called physician extender positions, like nurse practitioners and physician assistants. And although he's having a uniquely busy summer, Bramante's hopeful those efforts will pay off and he'll be able to relax for the next few. Rodin isn't so confident the clinic will be able to quickly attract new doctors.
Oh, I'm extremely worried about my patients being able to find new primary care.
She says she gave her notice in the fall and reached out to more than 50 residency programs to help find a replacement, but she got little to no response. In Soldotna, I'm Riley Board.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, surfers from across the country descend on Turning an Arm to ride the Boar Tide.
It is tough to learn, but once you learn how to catch the wave, you're able to be on the wave, like, for minutes.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
What gives you strength? Strength comes from teaching the Alaskan way of life, getting wood, fishing, hunting, helping people in the community, and being an example for the next generation. If you have forgotten your strength, remember, there's hope, there's joy, there's love, there's peace everywhere. Share what gives you strength at recoveralaska.org/share-your-strength. This message sponsored by Recover Alaska.
Congenital syphilis rates in Alaska have risen steadily over the past 5 years. That's according to the State Division of Public Health. A pregnant woman with syphilis can pass the disease to her baby during pregnancy. Congenital syphilis can lead to serious complications like premature birth, stillbirth, or a baby born with blindness or deformed bones. Alaska Chief Medical Officer Ann Zink says the increase in congenital syphilis mirrors a rise in syphilis across the state.
It's a completely preventable condition. So we have tests for it, we have treatment for it, but if we don't identify a mother who is positive for syphilis while she is pregnant with her child, that child can have lifelong complications, as well as put that child at risk for miscarriage and stillbirth.
Zink says the state is recommending new guidelines for prevention. Previously, healthcare providers were testing at least once during pregnancy and then as needed. But now, the state recommends pregnant women be tested twice during pregnancy and once at birth. Zink says babies with congenital syphilis tend to be from mothers who did not have access to good prenatal care. Many of those mothers were experiencing homelessness, and many reported using hard drugs in the year before they gave birth. Zink co-signed a letter to healthcare practitioners urging them to test for syphilis whenever people intersect with the medical system.
Maybe it's an urgent care, an orthopedic clinic, an emergency department. That may be the one time that someone who's struggling with homelessness or addiction may be coming in and out of the healthcare system, or maybe it's an addiction treatment service.
Zink says the rates of syphilis were down for years, so healthcare workers may not have been trained much on the disease. She says rates of sexually transmitted diseases are generally higher in Alaska than other states, but Alaska is not alone. She says syphilis is one of the biggest public health concerns nationwide. The state of Alaska has settled the final lawsuit in what came to be known as a loyalty pledge scheme. At the beginning of Governor Mike Dunleavy's first term in office, he and then Chief of Staff Tuckerman Babcock fired several state employees. One of them was Elizabeth Bacalar, a former elections attorney with the Department of Law, whom the state has now paid $350,000 to avoid going to trial over damages from what a judge determined to be an illegal and unconstitutional firing. That ends a series of related state and federal lawsuits and brings the total amount the state has paid out in the matter to nearly $1 million. Alaska Beacon reporter James Brooks has been following the cases and says it all started when Dunleavy and Babcock asked state workers for resignation letters as the administration determined who to keep on during the transition from former Governor Bill Walker's administration.
There's always turnover in between governors, and governors always ask policymaking employees whether they want to stay on. They're invited to submit letters of resignation, and the governor and his chief of staff and other staff can decide, yes, we want to keep certain people in policymaking positions. We don't want to keep other people in policymaking positions. And that's the normal course of business. What happened in late 2018, early 2019, was that the Dunleavy administration asked for more letters affecting more people than normally go out. And as a result of that, you saw a series of lawsuits come out challenging both the governor and his chief of staff, saying that they're effectively asking for a loyalty pledge. by forcing employees to submit these letters of resignation, not knowing whether they'll be accepted or not.
And I guess, I mean, the implication there is that that then becomes a political decision based on what that person's views are or whether they, you know, agree politically with the governor, right?
That's what was argued in court. And then we saw a federal judge decide that, yes, in the case of two Alaska Psychiatric Institute doctors, that this did amount to an unconstitutional patronage scheme. Those two doctors settled their case for almost $500,000. There was another attorney who settled a lawsuit filed in state court. She received a payment as well. And Bacalar's case was the last lawsuit filed.
Well, let's, I guess, start with Libby Bacalar. I mean, what did she say at the conclusion of this?
She spoke out on her blog, and I should take a step back and say Bacalar believed she was targeted by the Dunleavy administration because of her political views. Before her firing, she was an outspoken blogger and frequent critic of Dunleavy and former President Donald Trump on social media, and she suspects that she was fired for her posts outside of work rather than any actions inside of work, and a judge did eventually agree with that.
So she posted on her blog, of course, her reaction, I guess, to this settlement, and what was that?
Her reaction was that she's glad it's over. It's been a hard 5 years for her, she said, and Bacalar's settlement is $350,000. Of that, 40% will go to her attorneys, Bacalar said on her blog. She'll end up with about $75,000. And she said that because it's public money, she thinks people should know what she's going to do with it. And she plans to re-roof her house, do some renovations, and pay off her car. And she's relieved that the federal judge's order in this case will move forward, even though she's settled. And that order effectively draws lines around a future governor's ability to do the same kinds of transition firings that we saw 5 years ago.
Gotcha, yeah. And then the response from the state wasn't exactly like, oh yeah, those people that we fired, they were right.
Yeah, and the state has expressed a willingness to continue to fight this case and appeal it to, say, for example, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. And so the state wasn't willing necessarily to give up without a fight. And I should point out that one of the questions that came up when I was reporting this was, well, the federal judge found Dunleavy and his former chief of staff, Tuckerman Babcock, personally liable. He said that their actions were so egregious that they didn't fall into the ordinary duties of a governor. But the state ended up footing the bill for both their legal defense and the settlements themselves. And the question came up and was asked to me by a reader, well, why is the state paying for this? And I go back to a 2022 statement that Dunleavy said. He said that if ordinary citizens want to run for office, then they need to be able to do that without threat of lawsuits that could make it impossible or unaffordable for them to run. And that was his reasoning.
That was Alaska Beacon reporter James Brooks. You can find him at alaskabeacon.com.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Alaska needs more quality, licensed childcare providers. If you're interested in starting a childcare business, connect with threadalaska.org for support and guidance. There are several resources to get licensed and launched in Alaska. A licensed facility opens doors and opportunities for the business owner and creates a safer, more engaged place for children. You can make a lasting difference in the lives of children and their families. This message sponsored by Thread.
We're glad to have you tuning in, and we'd love to welcome you as a member. Make a donation to this station and be a part of the public media family. Thank you.
If For the first time in 3 years, the Anchorage School District has enough bus drivers to staff all their routes when school starts. At the ASD Transportation Center on Tudor Road yesterday, Superintendent Jarrett Bryant said drivers play a big role in education.
We were in a big transportation crisis last year, and this year is about celebrating the fact that all of our students will have access to transportation this upcoming year.
Over the last 2 years, some drivers chose to drive tour buses during the first part of the school year, leaving the district without enough drivers for each bus route. That left students with no transportation for up to 6 weeks at a time. Bryant says the district did a better job recruiting this year.
We did increase the wages to be competitive compared to where we were at 2 years ago. And we also offered all of our bus drivers summer employment. So that way they didn't have to think about where they're going to work at outside of ASD.
The summer employment offered to bus drivers involves situational training and bus maintenance. Bus routes will be announced on August 10th for the 23,000 Anchorage students who use district transportation to get to school. The first day of school for Anchorage students is August 17th. The Salmon on Parade contest, sponsored by Norton Sound Health Corporation, went on display around Nome last Friday. A total of 100 salmon cutouts were reserved and distributed to Nome participants on June 20th and were completed by July 24th. Prizes are awarded for the best overall, best message, most creative, and most culturally inspired projects. There were no rules in decorating your salmon besides signing your name and keeping your decoration family friendly. In 2019, NSHC hosted a Seals on Parade, which showcased 87 hand-decorated seal cutouts across Nome. Winners were voted by the public and cash prizes were awarded. The decorated salmon showcase artwork from artists across the region. One of the artists is 7-year-old Elizabeth Fan. Her salmon is decorated with swirls and bright colors located on the corner of Front Street and East End Street. Her project, titled Ocean Glamour, was inspired by one of Nome's scenic spots.
Since we live in front of the ocean, I thought about, maybe I should do a fish inspiration for the ocean.
She says she used several materials to decorate her salmon.
I used acrylic paint, a swipe, glitter.
The Salmon on Parade give all ages an opportunity to creatively express themselves and display their artwork to the community. The salmon around town showcase the community's culture and diversity, fostering a sense of identity and pride among residents. Elizabeth says the most fun part of decorating her fish was doing it with her mom, Veronica Fan. For young artists like Elizabeth, art initiatives provide opportunities to express themselves, promoting their personal growth and development. Integrating art into smaller communities can have positive effects on social and cultural aspects, enhancing the overall quality of life for its residents. Well, twice a day, the normally calm waters of the Turnagain Arm surge upwards, creating a wave known as a tidal bore that attracts surfers from all over. As Alaska Public Media's Dev Hardiker reports, it's unlike any other wave in the United States.
A group of people in wetsuits stand in the knee-deep water near Girdwood. They clutch their surfboards and watch as a wave rushes upstream towards them. They're here to surf the bore tide, a rare tidal phenomenon that the Turnagain Arm is home to. It's a wave that surfers like Pete Beachy can ride for a very long time.
We're pretty lucky that we get to measure our waves in terms of miles. You know, we might only get 2 waves a day, but we might be able to ride for 4 or 6 miles.
Beachy is part of a tight-knit group of about a dozen local surfers who head out to the arm almost every day to surf the bore tide. But it's not just Alaskans drawn to the long wave. Surfers come from all over the country to try it. Beachy started a guide company in 2015 to help teach surfers experienced in other waters the intricacies and the dangers of the bore tide, which he's surfed for a dozen years.
It is tough to learn, but once you learn how to catch the wave, you're able to be on the wave, like, for minutes. And in ocean time, a lot of places, you catch the wave and you stand up for a few seconds and then you kick out. So in terms of time on the wave, you can get a whole month's worth of board time in one wave.
Turnagain Arm's bore tide is caused by the extreme 40-foot difference between high and low tide. Every 12 hours when the tide comes in, the shape of the channel funnels the water into a wave that runs all the way up the arm. There's not many places where tidal bores occur regularly. The Turnagain Arm is the only surfable bore in the United States. The trickiest part, Beachy says, is that you only get one shot.
It's kind of one and done. If you miss the wave at this section, you got to come back the next day and try again.
This afternoon, Beachy is preparing to take seven surfers out into the water. They're pulled over on the side of Seward Highway, donning wetsuits and waxing their boards. Joe Sullivan came from Hawaii with his daughter Pueo to surf the bore tide. He's been here for 2 weeks and says it's like nothing he's ever done before. In other places, the longest waves he'd surfed were under a minute. But here, at Turnagain Arm, the ride can last 5 to 15 minutes. And if you paddle out far enough, it can be almost an hour.
So this is way longer. This is way longer, for sure. And you can feel it. You can feel it in your legs and you feel it in your mind. You're like, what is happening right now? It's trippy.
Sullivan says his Alaska itinerary revolves around catching the wave every time it breaks, twice a day. He lives what he calls mini days.
So where everyone else is living 24-hour days, we live 12-hour days, which is a real thing. So you wake up, you surf, you eat, you sleep, and you wake back up, and you surf, and you eat and sleep. It's pretty good.
Corey Johnson is visiting from Carlsbad, California. He and his family are surfing the bore for the first time.
I'm excited. I don't like the idea of you only having one chance. You don't have a whole lot of time to learn the wave, so...
Right before they paddle out into the arm, Beachy warns the group about one of the dangers of surfing in the area, the mud flats. The mud is like quicksand, and the tide rises extremely fast.
It's a deadly area to play in, and that's what I try and teach people out here, is how to do it safely, how to be respectful of the waters.
Beachy gets himself stuck and demonstrates how to escape the mud by throwing his arms wide and slowly working his legs out one at a time. Then, it's time to paddle out. But there's no waves to push through like in ocean surfing. There's just the one on the horizon. It's barely visible, but you can hear it. And finally, it's here. The line of surfers jump on their boards as the wave hits them. Everyone catches the wave. The ride lasts almost 4 minutes. It drops them off right where they launched. They peel off their wetsuits under the hot sun. Beachy says the ideal conditions speak to the group's wave karma.
Everybody was happy, everybody had a good time, so, like, you can't ask for anything more than what we had today. Perfection.
And he'll be back out again tomorrow for the next wave. In Anchorage, I'm Dev Hardiker.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Riley Board in Kenai, Rachel Cassandra and Dev Hardiker in Anchorage, and Ava White in Nome. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde, Tim Rocky is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. From one end of Alaska to the other and everywhere in between, public media works to provide quality programming and statewide news you can count on and news you can trust. Whether you're listening at home, at work, or in the car, we're grateful to be a part of your day. Thank you for tuning in. Sustaining membership offers public media greater financial stability month to month, so consider making a sustaining gift to this station. Thank you. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.